Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome. This is Lizzie and Justin. We are here. We are going to collapse in hysterics, which we'll explain why in a moment. But we are here for the 93rd week of our Third Space Turning Towards Life project. And you need to know, if you're with us live or listening afterwards, that I am sitting in a cupboard and sitting in the very, very beautiful workshop space where we have been running the first session of our new professional coaching course in integral coaching. So it's been a right old kerfuffle getting ourselves organized today, and it's why we are later than planned. And I'm see.
I can't stop laughing. I really thought I had it together. I've laughed for about 5 minutes already, and now we're live.
Yeah.
I'm trying to pull myself together.
Well, welcome everyone. You can be here with us in our messy, real incompleteness. We have been having a wonderful laugh together about the craziness of putting out a live Facebook video and a podcast, come hook and come by hook and by crook, whatever's happening around us. So here we are again.
The brilliant thing is that Justin's in the cupboard of this room, but the cupboard doesn't have a lid on it. So every time Justin speaks, I can hear his voice coming out of the lid of the cupboard, and then every time I speak, my voice goes into the lid, but just separated by really thin walls with no lid. And I think when we're done, I have to show you all what it's like to see Justin sitting in the cupboard.
We will post photographs so you can see the situation that we're doing this from today.
Okay.
Very entertaining.
I was just trying not to laugh at this lovely, beautiful poem about trees that we've chosen. Oh my gosh. I have to take some deep breaths. Oh. So, hello everybody. We are on day 4 of what is the most beautiful program, a coaching program, that is gladly filled with this kind of laughter as well as all kinds of meaningful coaching. And Justin and I have just done a couple of coaching demonstrations and both done our best to bring something to these wonderful people who are on this program. And it's quite something beginning this year thing. And so here we are in our beautiful venue, as Justin was saying, and I'm just peeking my head around and looking at all of the lovely chairs set up and the flowers, and it's a very lovely space, and we're very grateful to be here. And the reason I chose this poem is because I was walking home, so we're right by the river in Hammersmith in London, and there was this extraordinary tree, and I'd seen this poem posted on somebody's feed who was in our previous PCC, and I thought, my goodness, how wonderful to marry up this tree with this poem, like an actual tree that was in front of me. And so that's why we bought this poem, because of where we are and how it is to encounter these beautiful beings. And I know, Justin, you have a particular affinity with trees as well, so I thought that it would be a lovely thing for us to share with each other and with everybody. So I'm going to have a read first, and then Justin, it's not so long, we can both read it, couldn't we? Mm. So the poem's called Trees by Howard Nemiroff. So here we go. To be a giant and keep quiet about it, to stay in one's own place, to stand for the constant presence of process and always to seem the same, to be steady as a rock and always trembling, having the hard appearance of death with the soft, fluent nature of growth, one's being deceptively honoured, one's becoming deceptively vulnerable, to be so tough and take the light so well, freely providing forbidden knowledge of so many things about heaven and earth, for which we should otherwise have no word. Poems or people are rarely so lovely, and even when they have great qualities, they tend to tell you rather than exemplify what they believe about, what they believe themselves to be about. While from the moving silence of trees, whether in a storm or calm, in leaf and naked, night or day, we draw conclusions of our own, sustaining and unnoticed as our breath, and perilous also, though there has never been a critical tree about the nature of things.
So I'm going to read it too. Before I read it, I'm going to say two things. The first of which is, if you are watching us live on Facebook today, or if you are catching up with us later, maybe on YouTube or on our podcast, the source is available to you. So it's in our Facebook feed, and it will be on our turningtowards.life website. Sometimes I know people like to read along with us, and you're so welcome to do that, to have the words in front of you. So the second thing I want to say is, one way you could listen to this poem is to see what it's like, even before I read, to feel what the way of being of a tree is. Because this is, seems to me, is a way that we can be too. And you might find it helpful, if you're not driving or cycling or walking, something like that, to stop and feel your feet on the floor, feel your own rootedness and solidity and depth and silence as well. And I will read from that place and into that place. This is called Trees by Howard Nimerov. To be a giant and keep quiet about it, to stay in one's own place, to stand for the constant presence of process and always to seem the same, to be steady as a rock and always trembling, having the hard appearance of death with the soft, fluent nature of growth, one's being deceptively armored, one's becoming deceptively vulnerable, to be so tough and to take the light so well, freely providing forbidden knowledge of so many things about heaven and earth, for which we should otherwise have no word. Poems or people are rarely so lovely, and even when they have great qualities, they tend to tell you rather than exemplify what they believe themselves to be about. While from the moving silence of trees, whether in storm or calm, in leaf and naked, night or day, we draw conclusions of our own, sustaining and unnoticed as our breath, and perilous also, though there has never been a critical tree about the nature of things.
So Justin, there are so many distinctions here, so many things to say about the nature of trees. And I feel like, you know, one of the reasons for bringing this kind of repeated realization that things in the world have so many gifts for us. Like, who knew a tree could teach us how to be? And to teach us how to find, like, integrity, physical integrity, and the way that we speak and the way that we act and all of those things. And the fact that also Howard Nemiroff has taken the time to learn about the nature of trees in this particular way, that it can teach us this much. It feels really moving to me to realize that the world is filled with these kind of gifts. If we choose to look, all of this wisdom is drawn from something, an entity, a being, which is many, many times taken for granted and many, many times destroyed without this sense of what's actually there and what's being gifted to us. So it feels very honouring of and important to articulate the honouring of these beings and to have this here in service of our own humanness, but in service of realising what a gift so many things are that we just don't pay attention in the way that is right.
The way that you're saying it, Lizzie, helps me to do two things at the same time. So one is to appreciate the extraordinary beauty and depth and wisdom of trees themselves. Like you said, we so easily ignore that and we treat them as resources for our own consumption primarily. You know, this tree is here to entertain me or to make something beautiful for me or to make paper for me or to build a house for me. And trees are all of those things. But when we only relate to them that way, we flatten the world. And it seems to me that when we flatten the world that way, we also flatten ourselves. Like we make ourselves shallow by the way in which we relate to what's around us. And it's one of the things that I think we find a way to keep on saying again and again, but it's really striking me now, which is that to be a human is to be made by how we live. So when we treat everything around us as a resource and as a surface something without feeling and appreciating its depth and how other it is from us and how much there is here that we, I mean, there's all the things Howard Nemiroff said and there's all the things he didn't say. And then all the things nobody can say. And it's the first thing that's really striking me right now is I'm going to say it this way, is our responsibility to start to look this way. Not only so that we might have, I know that I'm reminded by this from reading the poem that I feel deepened and opened, and I like the feeling of feeling deepened and opened, but I'm talking about something much beyond that, which is that I think when we can learn to look this way, we can be an invitation, such a profound invitation to depth and realness and care and wonder and beauty and truthfulness in others. And there's this thing, I don't think he says it. He says that there's never been a critical tree, which I love. Isn't it right? But there also somewhere he talks about armoring and vulnerability. These trees are not. Trees are a great invitation for us both to be strong and available at the same time. And I feel like this poem is reminding us, even before we even pay attention to the quality of the trees themselves and what we might learn from that, is reminding us that there is a way that we can orient to life. That most of us aren't taught and aren't encouraged because, frankly, there's too much to do and there's too much to be frightened of, which is the sort of two predominant situations that so many of us seem to find ourselves in our own bodies and our own relationships to things.
Yeah. It is really moving. And I love what you said, Justin, about... the way we live, our way of being makes us who we are. How we relate to things makes us in so many ways. And to be given the gift of seeing, feeling a tree and letting it affect my life feels like, how would I not do that? And yet I've walked past plenty of trees and not even looked. And I have also cuddled trees, and I know that there's this like weird thing about being a tree hugger or whatever, but it's really beautiful. Like the feeling, physical feeling of the stillness and the solidity and the knowing that something is growing and subtly all the time, every moment, shifting and changing and getting different. And being so close to that whilst being a being that's I don't experience myself like that, as in I experience myself as much faster than a tree. I experience myself as more complicated than a tree. But the slowness of a tree and the simplicity, well, of course, it's a massively complex thing, but as in it's not having a load of thoughts, as far as I can tell. It's being. And by being physically close to a tree, how much it can teach me about being. It's so curious, isn't it? I mean, we're these kind of bunches of flesh walking around with eyes and ears and nose and mouth and these kind of complex brains and everything, and somehow we deem ourselves more important than trees or flowers or whatever. And this poem is this really, I don't know, it feels like a homecoming, a reminder to really what's true about the combination of beings that live on the earth, that get sustenance from the earth, and that we're all in this together, and yet somehow we've moved so far away from that. But reading this poem and feeling how human it is and how many human distinctions there are to be learned from this tree that Howard Nemiroff was talking about feels so, like, as we're reading it, like, so obvious, like, to be giant and keep quiet about it, and to not tell but exemplify. It feels to me like a poem about humility and virtues. The virtues of being human belong here, and that there's a gift of being taught our virtues by another being, or being mirrored our virtues by another being, and wondering, just beginning to wonder about every line in this poem and every line of every other poem that might be written about God knows what else in the world that has so much to teach us.
I was really affected when you said tree hugging, because it seemed to me that when we say things like that, it's a way that we're defending ourselves against exactly what you're talking about. We go, we diminish or dismiss something that can have real depth by trivializing it. And we do that about lots of things. I notice how often in the work, Lizzie, that you and I do, that there are certain places where we go to really be open and receptive and of support to people, and somebody will say, oh, it's touchy-feely. And then I can feel the part in myself that wants to dismiss the depth of being a person and join in with that because it feels safer to join in the crowd and all of those things. And one of the reasons why this is so important is exactly what you were saying, that trees, of course, we can only relate to trees from our own human way of relating. If I was a bee or an ant or another tree, the whole world would appear differently and different aspects of the tree would come into presence. But we get to feel the human side of things. And like you say, one of the things that trees do, but one of the ways that we can relate to trees is it can teach us about being a person, and it can teach us about qualities and virtues that we can only recognize because we have them, even if we've long ago forgotten them or we've barely cultivated them, because they're available to us. So to be able to marvel at a tree's giantness and the way in which it keeps quiet about it is because, even if I'm someone who talks about what I'm doing more than I am doing it and being it, or who feels very, very tiny, it's because we can know something about what it is to be giant and quiet. It's available to us. Which is, I find, so hopeful, because to be a human is to be able to be in lots of different kinds of relationship, and is to see and experience things in lots of different ways. And we said earlier that we become how we go about things in life. And I also think it's true to say of people that there's a way in which we are simply relationship. I mean, I know I have my own body and all of that, and I can sit in a cupboard as I am now, you know, be on my own in a way. But really, I think to be human is to be related all the time. And how I relate is really how I am. I mean, that's the sum of it, really, as far as I can tell. And I know this about trees. So I've said this before, I live quite near to Hampstead Heath in London, which has got some really magnificent big old trees, some giants, some quiet giants in it. And I know that in the times when I have felt most afraid and most sure about how terrible it is that life is difficult and there are so many complications and everything, to go and be with a tree and to put my hand on its rough bark and to feel its aliveness that barely moves. Like, if you really stop and slow down, a tree is different to a wall or a piece of timber that's holding up a house. It's a different something. And I get reminded that there's a different time scale to my own hurriedness and my own certainty that it has to work out fine for me and all of that kind of stuff. I can look at a tree and I can get, oh, if I were where you are, I would see this life, its consequences and its possibilities in a whole different way. And I really am so grateful to be able to feel that when I'm with a tree. So I go to the woods as salvation sometimes when I'm desperate. And that's where I learn to find a ground that actually no other person can give me, because a tree can give us what a person can't.
I was watching something earlier, Justin, about it's a documentary about trees, and I didn't get to watch it all, but the opening couple of minutes was about the practice in Japan of forest bathing. And it got me so wondering about relating the word bathing into the forest and into trees, and what kind of practice that might be. You know, what kind of something that we might commit to that connects us to this part that you're talking about, where we find wisdom, where we find reassurance, where we find redirection in ourselves to something more sane, something more settled, something more able to handle what we're in the midst of. And I feel like one of the things that might be the gift of that is, so this line, to be so tough and to take the light so well, it's like it might teach us that we can be many things. So I feel like one of the things that we tend to do is to be this or that. And there's something in this poem that's like, that's inviting me into, so I can be tough and I can take the light well. I can be armored and vulnerable. I can be hard and trembling. It's like, I just feel widened by the andness that Howard Nemiroff is teaching us about through his encounter with trees. And this quality of being human that allows us to have simultaneous experience. I can feel defensive and I can feel open. So it allows us to have parts of ourselves that are present and coming forth and moving back into the background a bit more, without having to label ourselves or be determined as something, but to encounter ourselves as a series of parts that are interplaying with one another, some coming forth one day, one minute, one hour, and others not. And that there's a dance between all of these parts, so that one morning when I'm feeling depressed, I might also know, feel that there is also something else here, not just my depression, not just my sadness, also not just my joy, but that there is a full spectrum available to us at any point, depending on how we define ourselves and what do we take ourselves to be in the world. And so all these kind of juxtapositions in this poem are this beautiful invitation, I think, to us to allow what's here to be here, because there's more to us than just the one thing that we think we're experiencing right now, and we can trust that, and that different things will come forth depending on how things unfold, and that to label ourselves is to kind of reduce ourselves, when that naming might be helpful, but not so that it feels like it determines us in some way, but that it helps us to acknowledge and helps us to process and be with, but it doesn't reduce us to that thing.
I can feel myself settling as you're saying this, Lizzie, and such a relief, such a gift for me anyway. I'm guessing this is true for lots of people, to know that I'm not one thing. And I think that we, you know, I said it before, like there was a sort of ethical responsibility to open the way that we relate, to have a wider range of ways of relating. It's striking me now that we have a responsibility not to reduce ourselves. And we reduce ourselves so easily, we misunderstand ourselves and we say, oh, I am shy, or I am, like you're saying, I am so sad. Yes, I am so sad. And it's always true that there's more here. There's more that we can name. So my feeling of feeling desperately sad is the truth, but there's other parts here and other things that will happen as well. And it's difficult for us because we live in a society that is, for most of us, is vested in us, in our self-reduction, because our reduction is has us fit into the cogs and wheels of a bigger system. You know, it's helpful if I think of myself as a consumer who needs to keep on buying stuff and who one day will, you know, find the way to the magic place where I'm okay without having to know my width and my depth. Because when we come to know ourselves with width and depth, we're not so compliant and we're not so afraid, and we're more willing to stand for what we really care about, and we're more willing to be open and vulnerable in a relationship with other people. And it's like the trees and Howard Nemirov and our conversation can teach us the mistaken understanding we have of ourselves, which is how we get to come back into our lives again. And there's a part that's been really touching me as you've been speaking, which is I remembered, you'll know, and I've spoken about this a few times on Turning Towards Life, that some years ago when I was very briefly, very seriously ill, there were a few days, and I'm sure many people who are listening in, taking part in this conversation, will have had an experience like this because it's so common. There were a few days when the people who were taking care of me thought that some very serious cancer might have been inside me. And the person who was looking after me said the most amazing thing that is in this poem that just touched me so deeply and freed me. He said, there's a process going on here. When he said that, I could go from being one thing, which was a scared, vulnerable, ill person, or maybe very ill person, to a living process in which there were processes going on. And although whatever outcome of the process didn't change from that use of that language, what a relief it was to know that I'm not unlike, that to be a human is to be a process, not an object. An unfolding, however the unfolding is, there's actually something, a real blessing in being an unfolding, a moving process, than being a fixed thing. For a start, I was way less afraid. And that, I think that's the same thing that I learned from being with trees, and the same thing I'm learning from this poem, is, and the same thing that you're pointing to, which is we are so mistaken to think that we're objects. So much of our suffering and the troubles between us come that way. Also, because if you're not the kind of object that meets my, you know, if you're an object, but you're not the kind of object that meets my life, I have to judge you or dismiss you or replace you or get rid of you, or, you know, whatever it is. So it's not just inside each of us, it's between us as well.
Absolutely. And the way that I work with myself as a process, and to be a collection of things, opens the way for me to see you as that. Like, I know that that's what you just said, but like, I'm just really receiving, like, if I relate to myself in a certain way, it opens the door for me to relate to others in a certain way. So it really shows me what my prejudices are. It really shows me what my judgments are, what my opinions are, to see myself as an object, but have the opportunity to relate as a process. And that's a very, today and always, a very important thing that we all, I think, have a responsibility to do, is look at the way that we're, yeah, that we reject some things, some people, and we don't reject others. And what on earth is that about? And we reject some objects and not others. So yeah, I just feel this is a very beautiful opening, supportive, expanding conversation. I'm very grateful for it. And I'm just looking at our time and also probably our hunger levels. It's really lovely that everybody, you have listened to this, and I'm not sorry about how much we were laughing at the beginning. I hope you get a flavour of the hilarity of trying to do this by hook or by crook. And when Justin and I are together, it gets funnier, because obviously we have to separate ourselves off in this hilarious way where we're in the same room, but we're not. So we will post a picture. I did take a picture of Justin in the cupboard so that you can see how hilarious it is. And I just want to say thank you to everybody for listening to this, whether you're listening later, whether you'll manage to join us on this random live time. We're really grateful, and this is a continuing, unfolding wonderfulness to do this together.
What a joy. I'm going to say thank you, and I'm going to just give you a sneak preview. So for those of you who can see, who aren't on the podcast, now you can find out where I really am. You can see that Turning Towards Life affords us the height of glamour.
It does.
We are very glad to have arrived on the island.
We think someone's coming into your cupboard.
Okay. That is funny. I'm going to finish now. Bye-bye. Bye.